Welcome to Bitches on Comics and happy holidays. I'm your host, Essie Fleenor.
I'm your host, Sarah Century, and happy holidays as well from me. And also, happy holidays to Stephanie Williams, who is our guest today.
I'm back.
Yes, you are. Yes. You are now, well, you've changed every time, so now you are a Marvel writer.
Go figure, right?
Go figure. Oh my God.
Well, no, the reason why I say that is because a few of the editors follow me on Twitter, and I didn't realize that until after the fact. I'm like, oh my God. So, y'all have seen my tweets and you still said, let's reach out to her. So that is pretty cool. I will not downplay it at all. I would be lying to you all if I said I did not lose my shit when I got the email, because originally I was like, oh my God, they're finally going to sue me. It wasn't that. And then I was like, oh wait, maybe they want me to write an article or something like that, that will possibly never see the light of day. It wasn't that. And I continued reading, and I was like, marvelous butts. I'm like, wait. So.
Are they going to sue me about marvelous butts?
I was like, I know I've talked about, Venom and Peter Parker's asses a lot, but guys, what's going on? So was that, and then they brought up Parenthood Activate, and I was like, oh, wait, you guys are really talking about the comic aspect. And I was like, okay, cool. I would love to write a story for the upcoming Marvel Voices in February. So I got that. I immediately replied. I'm lying. I had the email, but I was like, play it cool. So I waited 45 minutes, and then I emailed them back. And I was like, yes, I'd be honored. And I kid you not, maybe an hour or two later, the story came to me. So I'm going to be writing about Monica Rambeau and her mom with special guests, Thor and She-Hulk. I don't know how I finagled that. But
my two favorite beefy armed people.
Oh my God. The arms.
And I was so happy about it. And then I explained to them, why I want to include them in the story. They were like, oh, you really know your things. Because originally they were like, hey, do you need any past issues on Monica or any of that? I'm like, you all don't know. But let me tell you.
You're like, I have a better collection than you do.
Right. And I literally said, I was like, I actually have Amazing Spider-Man Annual 16 in a frame. I stand down Monica Rambeau. And I'm like, this is why I want to use She-Hulk and Thor and the whole thing. And they were like, yes, please absolutely do that. So I'm really excited. I am. At first, I thought I was going to freeze up, and because you know how it is, you finally get an opportunity to do something that you thought you've wanted to do for a long time, then it comes and you're like, oh shit, wait, what? Now I have to do it. But no, it was nothing like that. It felt like it did when I was writing Living Heroes, and that's pretty much the way I treated it. So I feel really good about it. I think you guys are going to love the story. It's only two issues. Well, let me speak that into existence. Because I'm a Monica Rambeau miniseries, but it's only two pages. But thankfully, I've gotten a lot of practice in trying to cram a lot in just a short amount of pages. So look at the universe actually doing things.
Mm, no one deserves it more. That's the truth, Steph. You have been researching, thinking about making goofs about comics forever. And you worked your ass off to launch Parenthood Activate and to launch But What If Though. Like you said, sometimes the universe feels right. And it feels so right that this is happening for you.
It does. And thank you so much. And I don't even feel imposter syndrome. And a lot of times I do feel that. But I just feel none of that because, like you just said, I've been doing this for so long, or preparing for it for so long, that it just feels very natural. And I'm thankful for that, because I'm not even going to act like these opportunities come around like they should come around like they do, but they don't. And I'm just really grateful to finally get a chance to say, hey, look at me officially screwing with your faves. And if they allow me, I will continue to do it. And I will never stop. And also, it's just nice because I haven't had to, dilute myself in any kind of way. And I know that I was reached out to because of the work that I've done. And it's just been me. And that feels really good because I know sometimes, unfortunately, a lot of us have to kind of forego a little bit of who we are in order to catch the attention of, you know, these bigger corporations or whatever. So as a queer Black woman, to be able to do that, like, that just, it means a lot. And I don't take that lightly at all.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. What the best. So excited. Everybody needs to buy Marvel Voices. When is the release date for it?
I don't, you know what? Sometime. I should know that. It's going to be in February.
It's either January or February, but yeah. Marvel Voices, number one, put it on your pull list right now. Go fucking call your comic book store and put it on your, pause the episode. Pause it. Go do it. And then come back. Yes, because please. We've got some fun stuff in store.
What do we have in store, Essie?
I'm so wound up. I'm just like so excited for Steph. I can't calm down.
Yeah. It's so exciting.
Oh, just like, you know, life is full of just watching people you know deserve greatness get shit on. And it's like not happening. It's like, yes!
Oh, yeah.
So, although I know there have been bumps along the way. So we're super pumped. We love Steph, and Steph is, she's a guest, she's a friend, she's a host, she's part of Bitches on Comics, as you know, listener. And so we said, hey, Steph, what do you want to talk about for the holidays? And Steph said, you know what I want to talk about? The Static Shock holiday special, which is called Froze Out, I believe. And I believe it's in season 2, maybe episode 5.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that?
You're on your shit.
Oh, damn. Sometimes it works. You know, sometimes the pot doesn't like erase everything. it's not always, but sometimes
it does. Trust me, I know.
Like, what a fun episode. I mean, it's deep, it's serious, it's like real, and it's so beautiful. So, Steph, when did you first see it? Why did you choose it? Just say some things at me.
So a very long time ago when it was originally airing on, I think, WB Kids, I remember watching this episode and like thinking I was in for, you know, like a really fun, goofy time. And that is not at all what happened. I just remember loving the episode, but also kind of being moved to tears because Dwayne McDuffie just has that ability about himself. Or actually, did he write this episode? No, actually, Dwayne didn't even actually write this episode. It was Lynn Yulee. So, wow, shout out to them.
The creation of the character, right? Like, really did, like, set the tone for a lot of this stuff. So.
Yeah.
His vibes are on it, right? Like,
oh, it's all over the place. And Dwayne McDuffie actually influences a lot of my writing and just the way that I view superheroes, period, because, you know, they are not police officers, even though I know some folks try to make that connection, because the difference is, or the difference should be, these are people who have these extraordinary powers who want to do good in the world. They're not being paid for it or any of that. They're just doing what they feel is right. And sometimes mistakes happen, and Static actually learns that, you know, not to judge right away and understand that everybody is going through something. So you have to meet people where they are and just kind of keep that in mind. I just think it's just a beautiful message. And also the fact that it does such a beautiful job of explaining something that is so horrific and should not be happening, but does, which is homelessness and definitely children being homeless during this time. So it's not that whole, you should feel bad, but also this should make you feel good because that's not your situation. It's a, hey, you need to consider this and just kind of remember that, you know, your fellow man is doing the best that they can and you need to extend grace whenever you have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah. I thought that this was a very interesting episode. I'm pretty sure I watched it as a kid. I think I watched this episode as it was coming out, because I was watching a lot of Static Shock at that time. And this episode resonates a lot. I later would experience being an unsheltered person, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was something that happened to me in life. So I thought that it was really interesting the way that they talk about it, because also I've done like a lot of volunteer work and things like that at like shelters and all of that. And I thought that it was interesting this one in specific, because it's like they actually talk to somebody who like works at a place like that to get this perspective or something like that, because the way that they talk about it isn't at all blaming, right? Like they're they emphasize that not only can you not blame somebody, but that sometimes people have like mental illness issues that they don't have any medication for and things like that. So to me, there was so much in this episode where I was like, this is so much more advanced than a lot of when I hear people in 2020 talk about this stuff, know? So it was like, I don't know, I was really impressed watching it back, because I'm sure I remember it, you know, from a while ago. But then watching it today, I was just like, oh, wow, it's kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, Sarah, I think you're right. Like it's remarkable to see even like the multiculturalism in like the first couple of lines, you know, like Virgil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that right? Virgil is like, oh, I got to go to this Kwanzaa celebration. I'm at a Hanukkah celebration. Then I got to go to a Christmas Eve. And then there was like a fourth one. And I was just like, this is so beautiful. Just to acknowledge like other faiths exist. That feels like radical in 2020. And it certainly was in like 2002, I think, when this came out, right? Like it's a very beautiful, beautiful episode.
Yeah, I think so.
And it tracks for the series, too, because the entire series in itself is actually some of the best programming, period. I wouldn't even say children's programming. It's just really good.
Mm. It's not preachy, which I think you had said, Steph, but I think that's just true of the show. It's like not a preachy show, but it is very revelatory. It's not afraid to like pull back the layers and be like, hey, what's going on? And I think that that's what's so cool about the way this episode's structured too. You know, it starts with like a pretty typical superhero trying to stop the bad guy kind of thing. And then it cracks that open and is like, okay, but who is the quote unquote bad guy? What is this person living with? It's just so nuanced. That's what I think is really exciting about it. You know, next week, listeners, you'll get to hear Sarah and I giggle our heads off as we talk about the Batman Christmas specials, which have like no substance.
Yeah. At all. They're good, but they do not have any substance and they are not about anything.
They're delightful for sure. But they're also like, I just remember you saying this, Sarah. You were like, I love superheroes' idea of Christmas because they are like, this is the meaning of Christmas, but it's like putting Catwoman in jail. And you're just like, how is that the meaning of Christmas? and that's such a funny thing, but like then I watch this and I'm like, no, Static Shock knows what Christmas and the holidays are about, you know?
Yeah.
And it's about caring about other people, which is like, why is that so mind-blowing?
Seriously, Virgil is like the only superhero who knows the meaning of Christmas.
And like actually learn something too. I love that he is this young kid. He's still growing and learning things. And I love how just the entire series in itself just allows him to do that. It's not a, hey, I have these powers, so I'm perfect or anything like that. It's like, I'm still trying to figure things out. And I love that he has those moments where he gets essentially humbled, but reacts the way that he does. Because this episode could have went sideways. If someone else was like writing it, it could have just been like a hot ass mess. But it's not. And I still can't even believe like how nuanced and how good it is for a children's show. And I think sometimes people forget like some of the best lessons happen in children's shows because of the care that is put in trying to explain this to a child. And then like you become an adult and it's just like, well, here, this person did bad. Let's lock them up. And it's like, well, no, let's talk about it. Like, how did they get here? And how does that relate to you? And like, what does it mean to have empathy? What does it mean to have sympathy? Like all of that is just wrapped up in this. And it's probably a reason why I watch this Christmas episode every single year. Like before we had DC Universe, I'm happy we do, because now I don't have to like get my computer a virus trying to watch it.
I did that with the X-Men Christmas special last year. I was like, oh God, I am listening to this and this is all chipmunk voices. This cannot be the right episode. I mean, I just keep thinking about how much homelessness has been criminalized, even like in Denver, where I'm based, you know, just the ways that people proverbially and literally, you know, abuse and spit upon the poor and the homeless in particular. And to see Virgil have to confront homeless children, to see him have to see a mother who's like
the
holding
mom,
a baby, right? Mm-hmm. And is like, hey, come here, let me show you where where this quote unquote bad guy lives. And, you know, they walk down this ice tunnel that's like 5 feet away from where she was standing, which is like pretty funny. But they go down the ice tunnel and then it's like, oh my gosh, like this metahuman has all these powers, can't control them very well, is clearly deeply traumatized. Mm-hmm. And you see Virgil's heart just kind of open a little bit more. And that's just like, what? This is so beautiful.
Yeah, like the way that you win in this episode is not by punching at all, right? Mm-hmm. Like he definitely has to emotionally reach out and actually listen to this girl. And that whole scene too, whenever she's just like, nobody cares if you're a homeless person. And he's just like, yeah, I've been guilty of that. And like, he's just completely honest about it and doesn't try to evade any responsibility. Like he's trying to step up. And I think that that's just so unheard of, kind of like that narrative that's just like, hey, this superhero's here and like he's actually just going to be a member of his community, right? And like help the person who is the most in need of help at this moment, while also, you know, trying to like juggle all of the other stuff that he has going on and like wanting to do right in his personal life, but also taking the time to reach out to somebody who he doesn't know. I think that all of that was pretty profound.
And this is how you abolish the police in your superhero narratives.
Yes.
By remembering the fact that these are people who, you know, have these power sets or whatever, but again, are choosing to help their communities. They're not, because I wouldn't even call them like civil servants because you're not paying, they ain't getting paid or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like they're just doing something out of the kindness or moral fabric or whatever of their being. Because like here in Charlotte, the unsheltered people's population has risen dramatically. I was coming from, I think like North Charlotte, so I had to like pass through Uptown. And I kid you not, like there is an entire tent community. Like it threw me off. I originally thought that, I don't know what, like a circus or something was in town. Like that's how many tents there were. Right. There's an entire tent community. And it's just really sad because you have all of these other infrastructures and things going up and just kind of like, I don't, for the life of me, I just cannot understand how, especially in this country, like riches in so many ways and like people are walking around without places to lay their heads. Like they've torn down a couple of the shelters in place to put pretty much bullshit, basically.
Yeah.
And it's just infuriating because all you end up doing is shuffling these people around to just areas where they, it's actually dangerous because like they're either like almost near where the highway is or something like that. And it's just not safe. And I can't understand it at all. And like, I just keep seeing the population grow as the population here in Charlotte grows, period. But I see that and I don't get it. Like, I know why things are the way they are, but just because I understand it doesn't mean that, you know, it makes me feel any less, you know, shitty about it. Cause you can only do so much. It's just like the powers that be that can do so much do so little.
Yes.
And just like, it's fucking, it's paper. Yeah. It's paper that we've given value to.
It's made up, motherfuckers. Like, why do we care about this, but we don't care about real, alive humans?
Right. And it's like the way that it's used to make an example of people, right? Like, it's capitalism's example of, like, that's what you don't want to have happen to you. And it's just like, yeah, but why is that happening to anybody? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
No.
It's definitely something that, yeah, I think requires like a lot of thought. I think that people have to look at it, you know, a lot more than what they do. Because in like Denver, you know, whenever I was living in Denver, and Essie still lives in Denver, there has just been such an actively aggressive campaign against homeless people, like for such a long time, that it just has gotten to be so bad to be an unsheltered person there. So working at like any kind of shelter or something like that, you just see all of these like really terrible stories and people who need so much help at this point because like also they're facing jail time because they like slept somewhere, you
like,
know?
What and, like, the fuck?
Yeah, yep. It's wild. And I think that, yeah, that's why I think part of why this was such an interesting episode, because you see like this young girl, as you said, reeling from trauma, right? Like she is somebody who obviously isn't okay. And then also, you know, early in the story, he walks past her, right? Like she asks for help and he's like, this isn't a good time. But it's like, it's definitely not a good time for her. And right. Him ignoring that is what causes, you know, like a lot of these bigger problems. And I think that we see that in our society every day. Like the way that we have normalized treating unsheltered people just so badly, I think has made it be acceptable to people to accept less in life and to expect worse and you know, all of the things. So yeah, I think that it's like this episode, it's wild for it to be like a 20 minute children's cartoon or like, yeah, as you said, not even really a children's cartoon, but cartoon that many children watched, and to see something this heavy kind of be dealt with, because I think that now it's a much more taboo subject almost for like children's television.
I can't think of a single animated series that's for kids that did this besides, I mean, I guess X-Men did a little bit because they went with the Morlocks, but that's like a weird twist.
That's a bad choice.
Also, they did it very poorly.
Yeah, they're just like, well, we're going to go back to our mansion. Hope you guys have a good
Christmas.
We got to go
to our mansion that has like a huge Christmas tree and like 40 feet around it where no things are. Like, people could sleep there, Charles.
This is the exact opposite of the X-Men Christmas special.
He's like Joel Osteen in that. I forgot, because when Storm defeats Callisto that first time they travel down there, she's like, yes, you're welcome to come back to the mansion. And I just kept thinking, like, Charles definitely heard that in the Mind Link and like went ahead and like telepathically locked all the doors. So it was like no surprise to me that they just went back home after that. I'm like, he's not letting them in.
No way, they're too ugly. He likes his pretty
person.
Yeah, he really is. What a groovy mutation. That's what just went through my head was whenever he was like that. And then she was like, Mystique's all like, aren't you kind of like grossed out by me? And he's like, no.
I'm a creep. Oh, right. That's right.
Oh, I know his Pornhub looks ridiculous.
Oh, no.
Steph.
I'm so sorry. I just said,
what did I do wrong in my life to deserve this?
It would have made its way on the timeline soon.
Yeah. What am I saying? I want you to tell me these horrible things.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, my gosh. People who are unhoused about their experiences and what matters to them, and nobody asks. Like, every interview I had went for 2 to 3 hours and I had 30 minutes and I was like, well, fuck it. I'm going to sit here because no one's listening to you.
Yeah.
And to hear women talk about having partners who beat them and they left and they lost everything, but they left because they valued themselves. To hear queer people and queer children talk about they had the audacity to exist, and trans children in particular, and trans children of color. And you look at all these intersections, and it's homelessness is really the thing that impacts all of our communities. And it's not the only thing, but it is one of them. And it is so important. Because when I look at permafrost, I don't just think like, oh, look at this like white girl who, you know, lost her family, which is one thing. I look at if her stepfather would walk out on her, did he hurt her? It looked like he hurt her mom. She flinched when he was there. Was she queer? Like, did they know she was queer and that's why he left? Any world where homelessness is your best option is a fucked world. And the truth is, for so many people who are unhoused, that's the truth. It is safer to be unsafe, to be out in the elements, to be with other people who choose their lives over living the way that straight people want them to, that men want them to. There is a safety there. And how sad that we make people exchange one form of security for another. What the fuck, right? Like, you look at our society on paper and like, what the fuck is like all I can say, you know? Like, this is so far from what the point is, you know?
It really pisses me off. Like, it angers me because it doesn't have to be that way, but it is, because you can just take whatever guilt or responsibility and put it on something else, be it, you know, through your religion by repenting or whatever, or just society standards, because, well, this person didn't do what they were supposed to do, so just write them off. Like, writing people off, like fucking taxes or whatever, I can't understand it. I just, like, for the life of me, cannot understand that way of thinking. Like, how does that not fuck with you? It's not even a thing of if this were to happen to me, how would I want somebody to react to it? It shouldn't even be that. It should just be like, yo, this is another human. They are just as, you know, deserving of basic human needs as me, regardless of their mental state, their sexual orientation, any of that. Like, it's just all, it like none of that shit just makes no sense. All these fucking constructs just to be terrible to one another. Like, yeah. it just boggles my mind. Like, how do you sleep well at night? Like, I don't know how anybody can sleep well at night. You know, they have a child that is on the street because they were upset that this child wasn't who they wanted them to be. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, personally, as someone who has brought life into this world, I would do anything to make sure that that life continues regardless. Like, I will fight a bear. So I can't even imagine if my child were to come to me and say something that was not along the lines of whatever society wanted, and me saying, well, guess I'm discarding you. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Before even becoming a mom, I didn't understand it. But now being a mom, like, I just, I don't know how you could at all be at peace with yourself. Like, you are shitty. And I am not afraid to say it. Like, you should ride in hell. And I don't even like to think that hell exists, but no. You definitely should go there, because, like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
It's been proven so many times that literally it costs more to, like, keep people homeless and stuff like that. So it's just, I mean, all I can say is that it's just a control tactic for populace, basically, and to, like, give people something where they're like, well, I work, that person doesn't work, and, like, all of that, which is always just, like...
Well, and it keeps us all aimed at each other. Like, yeah. I was going to say, you know, my understandings of homelessness have changed vastly over the last 10 years. The way that I grew up very poor and didn't even realize that I had been homeless until like a fucking month ago. I was like, oh shit. Like, I didn't have anywhere to go. That is homelessness. Wow. Never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. But like, I was trained to think of homeless people and housed people as leeches on society. I was trained to think of like, oh, I'm not like them. I might be poor, but I'm working poor. I'm not like them, which is like so fucked, because we know many, I don't know the statistics anymore, but like a high number of the people who experience homelessness are working. Yeah. They're working their asses off and they can't make ends meet, because in our country, there is nowhere that you can live on minimum wage in a studio. Like, are you fucking kidding me? We're still playing this moralistic game with people's lives when we know the equations don't work. We know things don't add up. We know that financial abuse is a thing that happens to women because they can't get away from men because they can't afford to. Like, what are we doing?
Hands in the sand. I mean, that is essentially what it is. And unfortunately, because it is indoctrinating us to go about our self-esteem is something as simple as, well, you could raise that if you look at this one person and see what their lives are, what they're doing, make yourself feel better. Like, a lot of, like, it's just so wild to me that a lot of that just kind of taught, like, from a very, 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 very early age, that a quick way to feel better about yourself is to look at someone else's situation like, well, it's not me, which is fucked. Like, I just don't really understand how, I mean, I do get it. I mean, not get it, but like, I know why, but just personally, it's just even still something I've always struggled with. Like, how does that make you feel better as a person? Like, what does that do for you to be in your car, not make eye contact with this person that is, you know, on the side of the road or walking in between cars, asking for help? And even if you're worried if their person is going to use the funds for whatever you think is okay, like, fuck off. Like, you're either gonna give or you're not. Because let me tell you something. If I was on the street, like, if I wanted to go get a dollar beer or whatever the fuck to get, like, I'm on the street.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're gonna go home and sip your wine or whatever in your warm house. But like, what the fuck do you expect me to do? Am I going to start a LLC with the $2 that you've given me? Like, what the hell?
It'll be really cold and stuff too. Like, drinking is something that people do. I mean, you know, I'm in like the frigid part of the Midwest right now, and drinking is something people do to keep warm all of the time. So, and it's just like people survived the Titanic by drinking a bunch and then falling into cold ocean water, but not dying because they drank. So,
okay, yeah, I did not know that. That is a wild fact.
I think it's only like one guy who just wasn't even going to try. Like the second the boat started going down while everybody was running around being like, oh my God, get me off this boat. He was like, I'm not going to be able to get off this boat, I don't think. So he just started like getting shwasted.
That's how you survive the apocalypse, it turns out.
Yeah. And he was like, I mean, from what I understand, he was like throwing pieces of furniture out to people and shit like that too. So he was like trying to help like while the boat was literally going into the ocean. And then somehow this guy survived. And maybe that's instant karma. Anyway. I mean, hey. Hey, everybody. Did you know that there is a Patreon for this podcast? And the podcast always needs donations and more viewers and listeners and supporters. So you can sign up for us, just us in general, at www.patreon.com/bitchesoncomics, which you cannot search. P.S. Just so you know, it has to be /bitchesoncomics. You got to type it in. You've got to do that extra work. But sometimes going the extra mile, it's for the best. It helps you feel good. It helps you feel like you've really accomplished something. And that's what we want to help you with today. Do you all want to talk about what happens in this episode?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Like, let's just have a very long conversation about themes, which is great.
Yeah, no, we need to. I don't know. It's the same as whenever somebody talks about, you know, school lunches or something like that. Whenever people are like, oh, like, well, then like their parents should learn responsibility or something. I'm just like, I was a kid that went hungry. So when you say stuff like that, it like burns me in my heart, because it's like saying that the worst things that ever happened to me, like, should have happened to me, you know? And I think that that's really gross. And this episode made me feel really good, because I was just like, yeah, that's not the message at all. Like, he reaches out. And then also, nobody lies, right? Like, at the end, he's like, is she going to be okay? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I really don't know. She's been through hell. Like,
no, I love that, though, because it's real. And it's not real in a way like, let's have this depressing ending because, you know, life is shitty. But no, it's real in the way like, no, I legitimately do not know, because she has been through so much that is going to take time. Like, it's just not going to get fixed in this one episode because you've talked to her and you know her story or any of that. Like, we don't know. But just because we don't know doesn't mean we shouldn't try. And I really love that message.
Yeah.
It's a double-edged message, right? Like, it's a message of hope. Like, no, we're not going to tell you she's going to not be okay. But it's also a message of responsibility, of like, she's not going to just be okay. Like, there's a role to play in that. Like, our society has to heal ourselves if we're going to take care of people. And that's like a conversation that is really hard for a lot of people. And a lot of the people that I grew up with, I know with you, Sarah, the folks you grew up with, even the folks you live around now, like, there's so much of that pull yourself up by your bootstraps. There's so much of that, I did it, why can't you? And, you know, never thinking about like, well, what about all the times people helped you? Like,
right.
Hello. And it's hard to sit and watch something like this that is almost 20 years old, that is so hopeful, is so real, is willing to hold like our hero to account, and then to be like, oh, I can't think of another time that this was this real, right? In comics, at least.
And I've legitimately tried to think of it, because I've been, of course, watching a lot of animated shows that are geared towards children, and I have not come across the episode yet in the many things that my son watches, and also me too, low-key, that had the same type of message. Or even just like this level of nuance. Also, I don't even know if I recall any other episodes of anything that actually talks about unsheltered people. Like, I legitimately can't think of any other cartoons. If y'all can, please let us know, because I would like to know. But I haven't come across anything.
The only time I can think about it is like in The Punisher, the live action one, Frank dresses up like a homeless guy to go meet someone, but he's just posing as one. And it's just like,
right.
Ew, like gross. I hate you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this episode, to Sarah's point, listeners, this episode is pretty much, you know, it's the holidays. We kick off. Virgil's at a Hanukkah party. It's like adorable. A girl is mad at him. I don't know. Are they dating? I don't know, but it's cute.
Pretty cute.
Pretty cute. We like it. He knows that he's getting some ice off of her. He's like, okay, my bad.
Oh, and then isn't it like her grandma's just like, meet this nice Jewish boy or something like that. And she gives the look like, all right.
That was so cute.
Oh, I was like, God. Well, she's either into Virgil or she's gay. So like, right. Either way, I'm here for it.
Either way, it works for me.
Great.
And Virgil's like really concerned about like all these like social events he's got to go to. He's a little stressed out about it. And he's like, I can't be a superhero and do this. And his friend, who is his sidekick and also his publicist, is like, I signed you up to light the tree. And he's like, what?
And he's like, that's just super heroics, baby. Like, he's totally just like, get out there and do it. I got a check for this.
80s business guy wheeling and dealing.
Yeah. He's like, well, that's the price you pay for being famous. And it's just like, what, dude? Like,
he's kind of a dick in this episode, but he's cute in some of the other ones. So
sure, yeah.
I'm a dick at Christmas, too, so I'll give him like a little bit of a pass.
Yeah.
And then Virgil's at the mall shopping for a gift, I think. That makes sense. And then a snowstorm happens inside the mall. That is surprisingly similar to when the Sentinels break into the mall at the beginning of X-Men.
Yes.
The mall was so important in the early aughts.
And it's like nighttime, too. It's like, how long are y'all shopping? In both episodes.
You killed me. I can't go on. Yeah, and then there's a snowstorm, and then everyone's like, oh, snow, oh, snow, and then the power goes out, and then they're like, oh, snow, and it's like, it's winter, and they're like, but there shouldn't be any snow, and then they're like, oh, what could be happening? Ah, oh, surprise, there's a metahuman named Permafrost, as Sarah said, and she is so cute, and I love when he's looking for her, and he goes, have you seen a girl with, like, light blue skin?
Like, you would remember that, right? Like, his jokes are good, too. Like, so that's something to forget about this show is that his one-liners, they're kind of under his breath. He's kind of like, here's my clever joke. But nobody around him ever gets them. Like, so I like his humor. I do.
I do, too. I was like, well done, Virgil. You're funny. I like you. And his power set is he's an electrokinetic. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love his little saucer he flies around on. I'm like, oh my God, so cute.
It's so cute.
You know, he's just being cute. He's got those big goggles. He's very, like, bright costume. Cuteness
all
around.
Watch the gear.
Too cute. So he goes and he, like, unburies the electric stuff. I don't know the words for these things.
But it's like, yeah, sure, it's power. It's electric. Yeah, he can do it.
All
yeah,
of that works. That's fine.
We're like, check, check, check.
Yeah.
We're fine with that. We're fine with that. We're fine with that.
Magneto in the Silver Age. Got it. Like, magnetism does everything. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Magnetism, very important. And then he, like, sees her and he's like, little girl, what are you doing here? And she's like very disoriented, right? Like part of it is like she's going through these episodes where she's being triggered. She obviously has PTSD and she's like unable to really know what was happening around her. Does that sound right to y'all?
Yeah. I mean, she has like a slightly distorted perception, right? Because of all of the horrific problems in her life, mostly.
Yeah. And then she does another snowstorm somewhere and Sack Shock's like, everyone's going to be so mad at me if I'm not at this thing and that thing and this thing. And then he remembers he's supposed to go to church and he's like, oh my God, my dad's going to be so mad at me. And then he like talks to the minister or the priest. I wasn't sure what faith he was part of.
Right.
And they're like, we're having an interdenominational service. And I'm like weeping. I'm just like, oh my God. That's so beautiful. I can't even imagine one right now. Which isn't fair. Actually, the mosque near my house, they always do interfaith stuff. But
yeah,
it's hard to imagine a Christian group hosting one at this moment in time. Forgive me, Christians listening. I'm just being honest.
Yeah. They know.
You know. It's your faith. You know. Then what happens? He goes underground? Why is he underground?
Because I think he's like chasing after her, right?
Yes.
Like, I should know. I've watched this many times.
But there's kind of a break, right? He's like, dang, I should care more. Dang. And then he goes and finds her by her. Doesn't she do the snowstorm thing again?
She does. I think so.
Yeah. She does it like 3 or 4 times. She has like different snowstorms. And they're so cool. They're like, look, the animation's really cool for them. Like,
and we've seen the flashbacks with her too. Mm-hmm. So in the flashback, she currently has a photo that has her dad ripped entirely out of the photo. Her mom was sick and her dad appeared to be an ominous presence in her life. And Child Protective Services came to take her and she dropped the Christmas ornament that her mom gave her before she passed away and then ran away from Child Protective Services, as many children do. And yeah, she's in a terrible position. And yeah, Virgil has to kind of own up to the fact that maybe he could reach out a little bit more.
Yeah, because like there's a while where they're like ships passing in the night and he like finds her photo in her like lair, which is just like so cute. It's just like an ice room where she's made herself a beautiful like 4-post bed and she made a frame for her photo. And it's clear she actually has a really amazing command of her powers, right? Which like that's one of the themes of new people with powers, particularly metahumans, is they can't control it.
She doesn't freeze the people, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever they're in the mall, like she freezes the mall, not anything that's, you know, she almost accidentally causes a tree to fall on somebody, but her command of her powers isn't really what caused that. It was more like her disorientation.
Right, which is like an interesting juxtaposition. You know, it's not that she's out of control because her powers are making her out of control, which is a very common theme with characters who are women in comics and have powers, mm-hmm. right? Like how many times have we seen a woman defeated by her own powers? She just can't control. This is not that. It is
Jean Grey.
Like, Jean Grey, Wonder Woman. Like, who even fucking knows? All of them. Pretty much everyone. Check, check, check.
Jean Grey, like, 90 times, though.
Yeah, seriously.
Jean Grey trips over an extension cord in that one episode where I think Mojo, the Mojo purse or whatever. Yes. And I'm like, how does a telepathic trip over an extension cord while running away?
Giggle, giggle, hair flip.
This is what I wish is just that, like, if they were going to commit, you know, it's like the same with like Invisible Woman in the Silver Age, whenever she would just get distracted and go do other stuff for a minute. I just wish that if they were going to write empowered Jean Grey and empowered Sue Storm, that they would just like call back to that sometimes and be like, yeah, Jean Grey is really kind. She's nice to everybody. There's all of this power behind her, but also sometimes she trips over like the extension cord.
Right. Like, there's a way to do it that is like she has flaws because she's alive.
Like we're having fun with her, you know,
versus like it's a this bit like different. Women can't handle power
exactly,
which is like what so much of it reads as. And so with Permafrost, it's like we're introduced to her as a metahuman who cannot handle her powers, but then it's troubled as the story unfolds and we're like, oh my god, she has an amazing command. Look at like the intricate nature of this like picture frame she created. So, you know, and then Static Shock takes the picture because he's like, I gotta figure out who she is, which is like, dude, don't take an unhoused person's one piece of property.
Don't do that.
But then again, he didn't have a cell phone in his pocket to take a picture,
and he does it for good, so it's fine.
And he apologizes and he gives it back to her when she confronts him. I love how that confrontation goes down.
Same.
She's like freaking out and she's using her powers and it's like so cool, right? And Virgil's just like, no, my bad, I'm so sorry, let me give this back to you, like we don't have to do this. And I just love that he leads with empathy.
Yes, the de-escalation.
100%. Yeah, I love how whenever she goes, nobody cares, and he's like pulling himself out of like a snowbank and he's like, I care. Okay. Like, I'm climbing out of a snowbank right now. Like,
oh, I'm gonna
cry here.
That's such a cute moment.
It really is. I thought it was really sweet. I definitely cried during this episode, rewatching it.
Every time I cry, especially when he's like, you know, I've lost my mom too. And they have, they find out that they have that connection. And it's just like,
you just see her soften. You know, you just see her face.
See what happens when you actually talk to people?
Yeah.
Like to treat someone like there might be a reason they're freaking the fuck out. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a reason she's freaking the fuck out, and it's because he's triggered all of her trauma. He's taken her one photo of her mom she has, her one possession. Yeah, in her shoes, I would also cause a crazy blizzard because I would be flipping shit. And he's like, yes, reasonable.
Yeah. When you're like hungry and cold and like everybody is just walking past you with armfuls of like gifts and stuff like that. Yeah, one can only imagine the emotional duress.
It's just too much. Too much goodness,
just,
like,
you know, they just have this sweet resolution, the two of them. You're absolutely right. The end of the episode is very much like, I don't know. It has like an after school special feel, but it's genuine. So it's not preachy and it's not weird. But it's almost like when they look at the camera, they're like, I don't know, will she? And like, that's like part of what I think is so powerful about this is it is a call to action. I don't know how you could watch this episode and not either change your beliefs around people who experience homelessness or get involved or double down or whatever. But there's just so much real human emotion and empathy and vulnerability on display in this episode. And it's just like, yes, fuck yes, this is what we should be doing with superheroes, with animated series, when we talk about homelessness, when we talk about any of the ways people are actively disenfranchised by our society, you know? And it's just like, my heart's all warm. And I was telling Steph before we started recording, I was like, I was expecting to giggle and make fun of it. And instead, I love it. It's amazing. I think I'll watch it every year.
See, like, I love how, like, the last couple times I've been on here, like, I've suggested things that are, like, so far removed from, you know, my usual, like, I want to, you know, laugh and giggle at shit and make jokes and stuff like that. And it's been, like, really serious stuff. And I'm like, I feel like I'm falling right into the trope of comedians where it's like, no. But those are just, like, the most serious people. And that's why, you know, they're able to find humor. But, yeah, like, this episode is just so, it's master storytelling to me.
Hell yes. Yeah.
I think a lot of what Dwayne McDuffie did was just a lot of master storytelling, and I just wish that he were still alive for many reasons. But could you imagine an MCU movie or even a DC movie, like live action, where he wrote it and like you actually have superheroes having these types of moments on the big screen?
Yeah.
Now I'm just so sad.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, so Steph, you'll have to do it.
I will have to do it. I will have to carry that torch.
You've been called.
But like, he's influenced a lot of just how I view like this genre and like these characters, and why I get so mad sometimes where, you know, folks kind of like reduce it down to it being an extension of the military complex. And I'm just like, but right. No, it's not that. It's just the MCU. Or like whatever else you've been watching, but it's literally not that at all. Like,
right.
Comics were not birthed to be like this extension of, you know, military power, or even state level power. It's nothing like that. Like, these are people who have these gifts and they are human. So they're going to make mistakes. But the importance is that they're trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When that article came out about the producer, writer, showrunner of The Boys, who was like, superheroes are inherently fascist. Everyone's just like throwing their computers across the room. And I was like, as long as I have known about comic books and the X-Men and everything, they have always been queer to me. They have always been about, you know, the double identity, the negotiating a new secret cool power you have, which is like banging ladies or banging dudes or banging MBs, whatever. Like, that's pretty cool power. And you have to hide it, though, because you could get, like, killed or, like, you know, disowned or whatever, and you don't know. And I've seen so many people talk about it as, like, a million other things, right? Like, Jewish identity or all kinds of different pieces. And it's just like, yes, some superhero stories are about the military complex, but damn it, people, let's have some nuance. Let's have some specificity. Like, you don't have to try and talk about everything in every breath. I am learning that, and I think I'm doing better. But I would like to challenge everyone else to rise to my level.
Well, I mean, also, superhero comics were created by, like, two Jewish kids who were writing stories about Superman taking corporate criminals out, you know? So, like, I am always just like, no, because even if you go back to the very beginning, it wasn't really about that. Also, if you're on a show like The Boys, I mean, that's kind of about that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all about what if superheroes are bad, actually. So, you know, there's room for that, obviously. But and like, cool. It can't be the only conversation around it, because, I mean, you can't discount the genuinely diverse crowd of people that reads comics. And
it's interesting you bring that up, because I think that's why for like The Boys and other shows that kind of explore that, I get just a tad bit annoyed, because it's just like, okay, but you are exploring this through a cishet white male lens.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, this is a fine conversation, but like, let's not put this on the entire thing, because I'm just someone who's like, hey, not everybody's had their fair go at this. So let's like pump the brakes a little
exactly.
and come back. Cause like, yeah, sure, you know, this is valid in these ways, but also like, please be quiet, because you are annoyed with the, you know, whole superhero genre and all that, because you've just been reading comics by certain folks.
Mm. Yeah, I was just going to say, that's why Doom Patrol is a better show than The Boys.
But okay.
Just going to go ahead and lay my cards out on the table on that one.
I am going to agree. Lie. I don't know how poker works, so I'm not going to lay my cards. I'm going to up the ante. What? I don't know. Does that work?
This is actually a poker podcast, so I wish that you would have read up about it a little bit.
Damn it!
No, I was going to say, because Doom Patrol is all about the outsider, right? And like, there's so many comics that are all about outsiders and people who just don't fit in. I think it gets you in a different place, right? Watching The Boys, I'm kind of just like, oh, like, that's kind of my response to a lot of it. But my response to Doom Patrol is more like, I'm going to laugh, but then I'm going to cry. And then I'm going to laugh again. And then I'm going to cry again. Yep. So.
And then I'm going to hold myself and rock after I watch the Jane episodes.
Oh, and I'm going to like love myself so much, because so much of Doom Patrol is just forgiveness and like not hating yourself and like forgiving yourself for all of these terrible things that you have been through and that sometimes you've done, because God knows we don't always do the right thing, regardless of how good our intentions might be. It's a show about good intentions gone wrong more than The Boys, which is just like, nah, these are like some fascists. Like, they're like kind of scary.
Right. And I think the reason people were frustrated is the term inherent when the creator said that, or with the
Producer,
or whatever. It's like, dude, come on. You don't get to say what everything is inherently. Like, I know like, you're used to.
Words mean things. Words mean things. Yes. Use them properly, please.
Especially if you're going to like go out there and make a claim like that. Like whenever I make like a blanket claim, I'm like, oh, here's an asterisk. Here's three more caveats. Here's, you know, because like, I'm like, wait, not in this situation. Wait, not in this one. Okay, actually, you know what? And then I'm like, you know what? I don't even know what I wanted to say. So just erase it. Delete, 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 delete.
Yeah. I'm having a lot of that lately, because I'm trying to like remember like, wait, generalizing isn't, you know, let's put some specifics on this. And sometimes it's hard to do, but I totally get that. Also, I read that comic because I don't let myself and curiosity get the best of me. And oh my Lord. It is
garbage.
I don't even know. I don't even know how it was picked up. Like, I understand conceptually how the, you know, execs or whatever, like, oh yeah, like this could be a really great idea because, you know, MCU is big and like, let's go in the opposite direction. People feed into that or whatever. But the actual comic itself is hot ass, racist, misogynistic garbage.
Yeah,
it truly is.
And it really just pisses me off too, because again, like you have this take, this one take that folks still like end up generalizing for all of superhero comics. It's just like, no, this one white guy who's been reading nothing but other white guys.
Who's like, I don't even like read comics that much because I mostly want to read things that aren't comics, which is like fine, great. Right.
I'm not mad at that, but don't make the comic book show.
Right.
It's like, I get it, because I'm like, I know that some people are kind of edgelords. I should like stop talking because I'm insulting like literally everybody who likes The Boys. Sorry.
I mean, I do like it.
Yeah, it's good in a way. Yeah, yeah, I understand what you mean though. Where it's like,
it.
I like this, but I hate
it's okay.
it.
I hate it so much. But I think it does something interesting, right? Like it's trying to do something that I have respect for and I think is an interesting idea. I've just seen queer people do it better. Dreadnought is a better critique of superheroes. We published a couple stories with Decoded Pride that, in my opinion, better interrogations of superheroes. Do we all have to be the boys? Do we all have to agree? No, I love nuance. I get why people like the boys. I found it highly bingeable. I get it. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I was like when I drink Diet Coke, I don't want it. I don't want that in my mouth.
A little bit of that aftertaste. Also, to have like a character like Stormfront and to watch that show just after the summer that we had, it was a bit much. It was a bit too much, actually. And I'm just like, you know, I guess y'all, but
sigh speaks just like you don't
like
even
that. That episode, it just, I get it. And I understand why that character is, and I know what it's speaking to, and I appreciate some of the stuff that it is speaking to, but also at the same time, I'm just like, I want y'all to understand that when you have other folks who are watching your shows, and I know you can't control everything, but like some of us are like having to deal with a lot of trauma while trying, like our escapism, like it's still trauma filled, and it just kind of really sucks sometimes. And I know you don't have to watch anything, but I don't know, like it just kind of sucks sometimes that that has to be the thing, like, well, gotta deal with this in order to like watch the rest of the show.
Well, it's not like you know that going in. Right. Like, you're not like, hey, Steph, FYI, we're gonna re-traumatize you in episodes 3 through 7. It's gonna be fine, but you're just gonna have to do it. In which case you could say, yes, I opt into this. Mm-hmm. But it's like you're watching a normal ass episode and then boom, this shit happens. I haven't seen season 2 because I was like, I'm mad at the end of season 1. I was like, I'm just mad about it. I will watch it, but I'm going to wait until it doesn't help it get a new season. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's my way of sticking it to him. I know it already has a new season. I know the guy from Supernatural is going to be in it, which makes me like it even less. Like,
oh, Supernatural. I will probably never end up watching because it's so long, but woof. Because whatever they did that day during the election week.
Oh my God, with Castiel, with like the queer. And then, so everyone I followed was like talking about it. And I was like, I do not watch this show. The queers are mad. I always need to know why the queers are mad. I just feel like very out of the loop if I don't. So I'm like going back through threads of people retweeting. I'm like 15 deep. I'm like, okay, here's the video. I watch the video and I'm just like, it's just as bad as everyone said it was. It literally looks like the brother is going to like say a slur at the gay angel who's dying for him. And you're just like, this is like barrier gays and send them to super hell is what I read someone say. And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Supernatural. That's what I know about the show.
I just had a conversation about Bly Manor because Monica and I both watched it. And then Monica was talking about like Hannah dies. So she wrote that article that was Flowers for Hannah Gross, which is just her talking about how there's this Black woman who then, of course, is like, she's so great. And then she dies. Mm-hmm. And then the lesbian, too, ends up at the bottom of a lake for all eternity. So that was kind of intense. But also, I was torn a lot while I was watching it, where I was like, I love this so much and I'm so hurt by it. Like, it's a lot.
Name of the game.
There's so many layers of nuance, right? Like, I think a lot of people responded positively to Bly Manor because it wasn't an outright barrier gaze. Did queer characters die?
Yeah.
Yes. But it wasn't kill them because they're gay. And it wasn't kill the only one because they're the only gay character. And so I think that's a really nice way you put it, Sarah. It's like you can love something and be hurt by it and it doesn't make it, quote, problematic. Mm-hmm. Is the killing of the Black character problematic? It sounds like, I haven't seen Bly Manor. Don't be mad at me.
It's just that it happens in the time that it happens, right? Like, I mean, I think she has like this great arc and like she's really interesting. She's great in ways that unfortunately are somewhat rare on genre television. But then, it's just kind of the context of like, what the hell has this whole ass year been, you know? Like, other than just like reopening trauma for Black audiences just in general, right?
Yes.
So, like, having that kind of moment is like, I mean, if it were surrounded by a bunch of portrayals where that didn't happen, it would be like,
exactly,
you know, we would cry still, but it would probably not have been so devastating for some people to watch, right? So,
well,
I don't know.
And it just sucks, though, because sometimes I'm watching something and like a trope or whatever will happen, but it's done very well.
Yeah.
And it is earned, but because there have been so many others that came before it, that were not earned and was so shitty is just kind of like, oh crap. So I'm finding myself now, really, I think like the last year or so, like when I'm consuming content or whatever, I'm taking in consideration more things. And I feel like I don't get as angry as much.
Right.
Because I'm like, okay, but I get, like, I understand why you did this. And like, do I like it? No, but I also understand like why you did it for your story. And, you know, I'm cool. Just like sometimes when Black characters don't show up and shit, I'm just like, you know what? It's all right. We don't need to fucking be there. Like,
just leave me out.
Like, it's all right. It's totally okay. Or like even like a queer character when I'm like, you know what? No, it's cool. Actually, let the straights have this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I'm just like, oh my God, no, just don't put us in it. It's fine. It's awkward when you do, because then we find out all of these things about you. And I don't always want to deal with it. But my view has changed too, because I have to like step back on things sometimes. Because I was going to say, in regard to tropes, like sometimes they don't even bother me anymore. Like we were talking about evil lesbian tropes, and I was like, honestly, I kind of miss it when I don't, I should not say this. Okay. I don't miss it when like every lesbian was evil, right? But I'm like, I do miss evil lesbians sometimes, because I really liked a lot of the old school evil lesbians that showed up. Like the evil lesbian vampire is like totally an influence on me, regardless of if it's like problematic or not, because it's just what I grew up with. Yeah. Like that's just stuff that I saw a lot as a kid, was like, yeah, well, here's the lesbian. She's gonna suck your blood or like whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, I mean, that's just how it was for a long time. And we've had this like wonderful period of just so many, you know, a lot of times queer creators, but you know, even when not, there's still tons of great media that has queer characters in it right now. Like I've just been watching queer stuff for like weeks now, and I haven't run out of anything, which is impressive. But so like whenever you see something, like I feel like a lot of people were really upset about Ratched, right? Because it was like evil lesbian trope. And I was just like, I kind of love that show, because like even though she is like, she's evil, but in like kind of a funny way. And like, I don't know, that's problematic too, but sometimes I can forgive it, you know?
Well, and especially with like Sarah Paulson playing her, that gives you like a it's such a different way of like presenting that character. I haven't seen it, but like Sarah Paulson, damn.
I'll watch anything. I know. I'm just like, hang me on those cheekbones. Like, Jesus Christ. She's beautiful. She's cute.
But like, tropes exist because they are there to help drive a story. So they're never, ever going to go away. Like, you need them, but it's just a matter of like, what care are you putting into it? Are you going to subvert it? Or could just do it better? That's all.
Yeah, I do think that's a good way of putting it, Steph. Like, tropes are part of genre in particular. They're just going to be there. And how we grapple with them, how we invert them, how we subvert them, all those things matter. Mm-hmm. But so often people just sort of stumble forward, do something just horrific, and then are like, oh no, I did a bad. And everyone's like, have you read an article before? Like,
and here we are.
We've been talking about Barrier Case. Deadpool, Ryan, Mr. Reynolds. Oh, that's actually not Barrier Case. That's Fridging, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
He knew like all of the pop culture stuff, and then he's like, I've never heard of Fridging. It's like, okay.
Are you
it's
kidding
like, I am going to strap you to a rocket and shoot you into the sun.
Like, this is why you died in the first 15 minutes of life.
Ice cold. I love it. Well, you know, that's full circle. So we did talk about Static Shock some. We also talked about a million other things because, hi, welcome to Bitches on Comics, the Tangent podcast. Steph, you're my hero. It is so wonderful to have you here. Where can people find you online on social media?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Steph_I_Will. I actually use my bio the way that is useful sometimes. There's a link tree on both of those, and it directs you to all of my things. Living Heroes, if you have not gotten a copy, a physical copy yet, don't fret. I actually just got a ton of books today. So hopefully by the time you listen to this, there will be a link up to let you know how many are left, because I'll have some for immediate purchase. And then I said I wasn't doing another batch before the year was over, but that's probably a lie. So I'll probably have one for pre-orders. So I don't know, like, it's just been fun to be able to just kind of ship those things out. Like, I really, like, every time I open a box, I'm like, it's like Christmas. Like, actually, I did a thing. It happened, and
now it's in people's hands.
I know. It's like really surreal.
I'm looking at my copy right now, Steph, and it's so beautiful and perfect, and I'm so happy.
Thank you. And so far, like, all of the, I guess, reception has been positive, which has kind of been freaking me out because I'm just like, no, guys, nothing could be, ever be that good. But so far, so good. And I'm thankful for that. But please know, like, even if you haven't said anything, trust me, I found every single thing that is wrong with it that I wish that I could take back. So if no one else is whipping my ass about that, trust me, I'm doing it myself.
The joy of having published work.
That I was going to say, that's the hallmark of an artist, right? Is like, oh, God damn it. If only I could do it's this out. Differently.
And then you're just like, I hate it. Thanks.
Right. Like, and I hate that it never, like, the second, fourth, fifth drive, nothing. And then when it's ready to go for publishing, it's like, oh, damn. That was a moment I could have fixed.
But then in 10 years, you'll look at it and you'll be like, damn, I've got all these Marvel and DC titles behind my name. And look how good Living Heroes still was.
That would be really dope. But my main thing is, like, I just want to make a lot of, like, old comic guys angry like that. Like, that just really brings me joy. And I know, like, I know some of you all are really, really cool. But I'm talking about, like, the gatekeeper ones. Like, I just...
The ones that aren't cool.
Yeah, the ones that aren't cool. The meanies. Those are the ones, like, whenever they're upset about something, I just, like, the Grinch. My heart grows 3 times bigger. It just brings me joy.
Fueled by spite.
Yes.
I wrote this article that was about Hawkman and him being a wife guy. And there were so many guys that got angry about it in the comments who were just like, wife guy is an emasculating term, and like totally being so mad. And I'm like, you guys don't understand. I'm a lesbian. That is the highest compliment I can possibly pay a man, is to say that he's a wife guy. Like, that's all I want to see from men. So, like,
I also feel like nothing's just as emasculating as the word emasculating.
Right? I know. It's like,
when you bring that up, then I think you're a weenie. Otherwise, we're cool.
Yeah, that was a funny one. But I remember reading those comments and just literally laughing like Muttley the dog from like the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, who's like rubbing his paws together and he's like, I just like, I cracked up so much. I just was on the internet all day reading comments being like, post a new one, drag me. It's so funny.
I just imagine like you're holding your large bunny and like stroking it and like giggling.
Like the villain in Inspector Gadget.
Claw, yes. Sarah I'm just Claw. Like,
I'm like, yes, Heather, we're making the men angry again.
Because making men angry is fun. I'm sorry. It is. It brings me joy. And again, I know that whichever ones that of y'all that are actually listening to this podcast, because you should be. But if you are, that tells me that you're probably one of the good ones. But please know, it just really brings me so much joy. I mean, immense joy to make me.
I mean, the most possible joy.
Like, my life meter goes up every single time.
It adds 7 minutes to your life every time.
So I'm going to live forever because I've clearly made up. Like, as every time I have a Batman take, like, some man is, like, very upset and mad. Which reminds me, like, it's time for me to make another, like, Bruce Batman video.
Yeah, you should do a Bruce and Selena doing their sex play, but not the way they think it's gonna go.
Oh, that kind of made me happy to do.
That was so cute. I laughed a lot and I was like, get it, Selena, get it. Oh my God, this is like the best part of my life is this podcast and is y'all. And thank you. In 2021, we're gonna have a lot more Steph around. We haven't told her that yet. I just decided. So
I mean, I already assumed in my mind. So it's
oh my God. Well, you know, we're minded.
I'm not one black character and then sitcoms that like just show us
It's just like, oh, hey, best friend. Yeah, we haven't seen you for some of the season, but you're back now.
Like, it's not February, but you're here. Oh, yes.
But you know what?
terrible things are funny. I'm sorry, y'all. Like, I mean, these things exist, and the way that I've gone about dealing with them is just to make funnies about them because they're funny.
Yeah, you can cry or laugh, and I'm going to choose to laugh most of the time. Yes. Sometimes I laugh and then cry. Sometimes I cry while I'm laughing. You know, it all works out.
I'm like, let's not discount the incredible amount of joy I feel when I cry. But laughing is fun too. Yes.
All right. Listeners, thanks for joining us. Steph and I are going to go laugh. Sarah's going to have a good cry. And happy holidays. Join us next week. We're going to be talking about the Batman animated specials. And none of them are as good as Static Shock. But the episode is funny because we giggle a lot. Thanks for being here, folks.
Bye.
That was the most languid goodbye.
I was like gonna jump in and be like, I don't know, the Harley Ivy one was kind of good.
Oh yeah, the Harley Ivy one was great. Well, they'll hear it.
Yeah, it's true.
We're a podcast that is all about making comic books more accessible to LGBTQ folks and women. So if you have a question about anything related to comics, comic adaptations, pop culture in general, conventions, cosplay, you name it, that's what we're here for. You can send us your questions at bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. Unfortunately, Gmail does not like the word bitch. They're pretty judgy about it. So we can't have it spelled out. It is bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. And do you remember, there's no I'm bitch.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.